So let's talk about the master technology competency list. Can anybody read this in binary code? No? Okay, well, essentially that says none. There is no competency list that we can operate off of. However, if there were one that I could provide to you, it would cover these list of things. So areas of cybersecurity, we kind of talked about that already, being in the cloud. The cloud is very helpful. You can go anywhere in the world and have access to data, but the cloud can also be very scary. If you're using things like Dropbox and you're using the basic standard level, you might want to change that tomorrow or today, really, when you get out of here, because Dropbox has been subject to breaches, maybe not to the magnitude of it being publicly disclosed, but it's important that you're protecting data and that you're not just using the baseline software so that you can get to and fro, travel, and have access to your data. Electronic discovery. There are preservation requirements. Whenever a legal hold is being issued with my company, the lawyers have to talk to the IT people to make sure that we can actually preserve that data. Because if you're holding things in a technological setting and your IT department has a data retention policy that could potentially conflict with your requirement to hold legal information or data for court, you're not able to retrieve the data once it's been removed. So it's important that you communicate with your IT departments to make sure that your data can be retained in the event that you need to perform electronic discovery. Other things like deliveries of legal services, SaaS products. I mentioned Dropbox already for file sharing technologies. You need to learn about those as well. Also, the way that your clients use technology in their day-to-day operations is very important. If you have a client who has all remote workers, then those remote workers are logging in through a VPN network. It's important that you understand how they access the network and the information on that company's drives, because if an employee leaves, you need to make sure that that laptop is returned and that VPN connection is removed, especially for labor and employment issues. And then finally, internet usage and technology used to present evidence in courtrooms. Just knowing how to basically connect to the courtroom's technology is very important, because you need to learn how to use it so that you can present your case effectively and show the judge that you are actually technologically competent. So the impact this is having on law firms and lawyers, I think, is great. For example, learning your resources, both internal and external, for your client's use is important. There has to be a financial investment made. As in-house, sometimes I've worked at companies where I report to the CFO, and there's this common battle between legal and finance of getting things in place that finance sees as too costly and generally outside of the budget. There has to be a healthy relationship between the two. If your legal department is still operating purely off of paper and you have files that are on your desk and those offices are not closed at night and you have people who maybe service your office, like janitorial services, coming in, you are potentially compromising your client's data because you're not adequately protecting it. Technology can solve that issue. Also, it's very important that partners attend these technology CLEs with their associates. It will go a long way. In fact, I think between the older generation and possibly millennials, it will help bridge the gap, because millennials can help explain what some of these things mean, and the more senior partner can also give perspective as to how things are done and how they should be done in a more organized fashion so that technology can be incorporated. And then now, not only, like I said earlier, could you possibly face that malpractice issue if you have a data breach or if you've failed to maintain client data in a confidential manner, but now you could be facing an ethics violation, which to me is quite scary because those are published online for the public to see. So here are some tips on becoming technologically competent. I kind of mentioned this earlier, but sit down with your technology departments. Those CISOs and those CTOs are really, really smart people. They can be awkward at times, but I've had some of the most fun conversations with them because you just get to geek out and have a good time with them and, you know, get their perspective of what they understand from technology. And in that moment, you get to be the student while they're the expert, and you get to ask whatever stupid question you've wanted to. I mean, I've asked plenty, and they accept it because usually you don't have that relationship between your IT department and your legal department. So I highly encourage you just to sit down with them. They know your internal systems the best. They know how the networks work. They know how data is transferred, so on and so on. Another thing is to continue to attend CLEs similar to this one, where you have experts in the field who can, you know, relatively answer a majority of the questions that you might have, and where we cannot, we're happy to, you know, further discuss offline those questions and those answers. And then finally, join non-legal tech organizations. There's an app called Meetup, and Meetup has a wealth of people who are interested in different things. Sometimes I'll attend technology conferences that have nothing to do with the law, just to hear what's going on in the industry. Technology is one of those industries where nothing stays the same. While we're talking about this today, I'm sure some type of AI product is being created and developed that will impact even this rule. So make sure that you're joining societies and organizations that have nothing to do with the law and everything to do with technology. That way your competency level can increase as well.